Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Home Field Apparel is again back for 2024, Ryan, to support Gopher Gridiron Radio. This premium, elite quality material, I'm wearing it right now. I'm not going to lie. I'm wearing a Washington Huskies t-shirt. I wear it frequently. It's one of my favorite t-shirts. And you know what? I know my mother-in-law used our promo code GG24 to save on this Christmas gift last year.
I just know that Luke, number one, has sailgating circled on his calendar for 2025, as I believe the Gophers head out to Seattle to play the Washington Huskies, and we're going to find out really where his allegiances lie. But no matter whether they lie with the Golden Gophers, the Washington Huskies, or maybe whoever your favorite NCAA 25 team is, go to homefieldapparel.com today. The comfiest clothes you'll find, incredibly unique, including these new coaches' jackets that they got. I can assure you, yes, if you take a peek at these, you're going to want to wear these around the tailgate lot for, again, the Gophers have 3 more consecutive home games. Then, oh, by the way, those USC Trojans come to town. So I don't care what team it is. You'll find something you like with the unique, comfy apparel at home field. And when you get to checkout, use promo code GG24 at checkout to get 15% off your first order. That is promo code GG, the numbers 24, at checkout to get 15% off your first order.
Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to, hey, the Gopher football team is capable of winning a game, as your Golden Gophers are a battering ram to the Rhode Island Rams. Do you like that?
Love it. There? How long did you sit on that? Oh, my goodness. That's good.
It's tough to say when you're such a lyrical mind like myself, Luke Buer. And joining us today for the second consecutive non-conference game to break down Minnesota's 48-0 win over Rhode Island is the Gopher guru himself. He's tired of seeing me. He's tired of listening to me, because we now, unfortunately for Daniel House, sit right next to each other in the press box. Mr. House, how are you today? How was your Saturday? And how much are you looking forward to it now? A weekend full of football with the NFL back as well.
Football till Monday, man. That's exciting stuff. Yeah, it's good to see you. It's fun watching Game in the Box, getting to hear Burnsy's reactions to everything that goes on. I enjoy it.
Well, you've now got... I'm not going to mention his name because he gets too much talk, and now he's going to text me about it. But I am not that bad to sit next to in the press box. I'm just very opinionated at certain aspects, would you say?
No, you're not at all. It's just it's fun to hear your reactions. That's what I'd say. Like prep during the week, you'll be like, oh, yeah, that's what I saw. Like, this is exactly what I figured would happen. Or like, oh, what in the world? Like, this didn't show up like you thought it would.
Right. It's an experience, Luke Buer, let me tell you. And I don't envy Daniel House for having to be the right side of me.
All right, so let's get into this breakdown for this game. The Gophers win 48-0. They put up 17 points in the first half. And you know, it was a thorough win through and through. I do think we have to put a disclaimer on the fact that you know, this is an FCS opponent, but you did what you were supposed to do. And I think stylistically and from a process perspective, this was really, really good, because I think, Ryan, as we previewed coming into this game, it wasn't so much the outcome is what you worked on, you know, because we saw some of the struggles they had against North Carolina, and just like the trauma that some Gopher fans have, or the scars they have about the inability or unwillingness, maybe is a better word, to try and work on throwing the ball in games that you should win. And they did that. So I think while we look at the disclaimer, because we don't know how good this team really is, we can be confident that, you know, they're trying to at least work on it. And that is reassuring.
If you want to be glass half full about the offense yesterday, that is your main takeaway. And I think, honestly, and that was what I led with in my thoughts after the game, was context within a PJ Fleck offense is so important. And that's where he's played two FCS opponents before, played South Dakota State in 2019, where the Jackrabbits were leading into the fourth quarter. And then in 2022, they played Western Illinois, which, House, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think Western Illinois has won a game since the Gophers played them, and that was two full calendar years ago. Is that
yeah,
true?
Yeah, it's really bad. It's something along those lines. And so, I know that, like, Indiana just totally destroyed them.
Yeah, they just – it was like 77-3. So the point I'm making here is two very different game scripts. One where you're trailing in the fourth quarter, another one where you win by 52 points, and your starting quarterback in both games is Tanner Morgan, and he threw 18 times. I clamored for it. I preached for it. Luke, I'm sure you even prayed for it. The Gophers actually worked on the passing game, and Max Brosmer threw 20 times in the first half alone. He ends up on the day 24 of 30 with what I have is four drops on there, as always. So they worked on the passing game, because, House, we've talked about it on this podcast for now years. The Gopher passing game under PJ Fleck is not a light switch. It's not something they can turn it on and off with this great efficiency. So that's what we wanted to see. Are you willing to work on the passing game? And once Max Brosmer got into rhythm, it was fun to watch, House. But what did you think, and what was your big takeaway there?
I thought the quick game was really good in this game, being able to get the ball out fast with a lot of high-efficiency concepts, doing subtle things to tweak them based on the coverage. They were getting a lot of zone coverage from Rhode Island, so there was a lot of access opportunities to be able to hit the flats and then find the checkdowns too. I thought it was a very similar scheme to what you would have saw, you know, when you go back and watch Max Brosmer play at New Hampshire. You know, high-efficiency, quick-game concepts that – allow the offense to be in rhythm, and then using that quick game sort of as an extension of the rushing attack, which I think was kind of the takeaway of this game. I mean, obviously you're going to see faster defenses. You're going to see more man coverage in other games. So you're going to have to get creative and different with your route concepts. But I think the versatility of the route concepts, spacing, stick, mesh, snag, stop route, spot routes, I think a lot of versatility, you know, they were able to get some switch releases. So that's like when receivers cross paths when they're lined up, they're sometimes stacked just to get cleaner opportunities to just slow the defenders up. Those are versatile versus man and zone concepts. So I think there's some things that they can build off of based on what they did stylistically in this game, using the quick game as sort of an extension of the rushing attack.
Or Luke, even with this quick passing game yesterday, and that's where Max Brosmer ends up with a 91.9 Pro Football Focus passing grade, House, which I'll explain again. The average grade in PFF is a 60. If you're in the 90s, some would say within the Gopher football program that the word elite would be thrown around. Now, again, that's what you should look like as a Big Ten quarterback against an FCS opponent. But Luke, 9 receptions for the starting tailbacks yesterday. Darius Taylor with 4, mm-hmm. Marcus Major with 4, Jordan Newbin with another. I don't know. That has to be the high output in the Fleck era for running back receptions, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. That was one of the things that I pointed out is encouraging, you know, from the first game, but even from the second game. And we can see how Darius Taylor is so multifaceted in his skill set coming from a wide receiver background. They even split him out into the slot. I do want to fit in some counting stats before we get into some more detail. On the day, the Gophers had 422 yards. They had 306 yards of passing. They were 27 of 34. Max Brosmer himself was 24 of 30 for 271 yards and two touchdowns. And honestly, guys, that percentage in the pass game is a little bit deceiving, because you think about the Christian Driver one that hit him in the hands, which was maybe his best throw of the day. There are a couple other drops. He had balls on the money. Generally, he was that grade, I think, is very fair, Ryan. He was really good, and you could just see he was just taking what the defense gave him, and when the opportunities presented itself, he absolutely jumped on it.
Well, what were the things everybody was clamoring for a week ago? They wanted to see some end zone shots in the red zone, which, out of a timeout, I will give context. I think that's important here. Out of a timeout, of which Fleck is going to be on the headset with the offensive coordinator, Greg Harbaugh, he allowed Harbaugh to call the end zone shot. Brosmer threw an absolute dart, hits Driver right in the hands. He's got to catch it, and he doesn't. But there's your end zone shot, or even a deep shot to Lamecki Brockington, where that thing was a rainbow. Could have been a better pass, absolutely. But that's not going to be the focal point. When it hits Lamecki Brockington, or Luke's guy, Lamecki Rocket Chip, right in the chest. I mean, you have to go up and try to catch the football with your hands and not try to body it in. That should have been a 40-plus yard. There were a lot of yards in that Christian Driver touchdown as well, left out on the field. Daniel Jackson dropped one that would have been a 15, 20-yard one across the middle. Gears dropped one on first down. I think the point to take away from it, House, is they're working through the kinks here. When you can't run the football, and there will be games this fall where Minnesota can't run the football. Hell, we're two games into the season and they can't run the football.
Yeah. Well,
guess what is an extension of the run game is a quicker passing game, or even dumping it off to your tailbacks, because we even saw on some of those plays where Brosmer's under duress. I mean, he had one of those in the second half where he just sidearms it to Darius Taylor, who is a check down, and he gets the first down. That is an element of this offense that was missing. House, they talked about it all spring. We talked about it all summer. But to actually see the quick passing game being implemented, I think it's a refreshing change of pace for fans. But what do you think?
Yeah, I just think going back, I did a huge study this offseason on running back routes, going through all the teams and determining how much running backs ran routes in their offense. And Minnesota was near the bottom of the list nationally. And now to see them really hit that benchmark of getting backs involved in the pass game, I think it's such a huge opportunity. I thought Max Brosmer had great insight regarding, you know, how you watch NFL games and you look at how involved the running backs are in the passing game, because it's one of the least defended. It's one of the toughest positions to defend in the passing game, just based on how routes are designed. You know, you're going to get better matchups, and if you can get in a position where you can get 4 or 5 yards on first down, or, you know, get, you know, be in more less predictable passing situations, I think that was the big difference in this game, you guys. I mean, you look at, like, passing down situations, only in them 22% of the time. It was 35 the previous week. So being able to cut that back and improve, I think they were ranked like 99th last week and how often they got into passing downs offensively. So to be able to just become more efficient through that quick passing game and generate more yards after the catch, they were at 130 yards after the catch in that game, which, hey, you're able to break some tackles as a receiving room. I think they had 5 forced missed tackles, in the receiver room, which is huge. Not just the receiver room, but the backs as well. It was 5 total. So I think that's important.
The other thing I want to make sure that we get in here is 12 different receivers caught balls on the day, which is encouraging. I've always clamored for, you know, being able to not focus on one player helps in terms of making it hard on the defense. But the other thing, Daniel, that stuck out to me was when Max Brosmer, like the routes that Max Brosmer can throw when he has time, or he, you know, yeah, let's say when he has time, and we'll get to the offensive line later, he can really throw just about any route. And that's the thing that's encouraging. And again, he is taking what the defense gives him, because they, you know, they largely played zone. And then, you know, he was patient, but, you know, whether it was you know, an out, or whether it was a slant in or a stop or whatever it was, right? He was able, at least on the day, to prove that he could throw all those routes.
I just thought the scheme fit what Brosmer does well. You know, getting the ball out quick, timing rhythmic throws, allowing him to process and get the ball out quickly. It neutralized some of the things I thought early on. You know, the pass rush by their defense, they did a really good job of getting Pena some matchups and doing some things schematically. And then Minnesota was sort of able to adjust and take advantage of the access opportunities they had in the passing game and finding those windows. So, you know, that's what we kind of clamor for. I mean, at the end of last podcast, talking about experimenting, using quick game, and blending in some tempo, and they did some of that too, getting the tempo involved, which I think is important. Like, I've always been a proponent of, like, you don't have to be this, like, run and gun, just piling up the plays,
right,
and just getting to the line of scrimmage and snapping it. Like, you can vary the pace of the game so you're kind of controlling the flow. And I've thought that there were some timely moments in that game where they did that. So hopefully they continue to implement that in spots.
To your point, tempo was one of the things I also took away. If you really want to get into the weeds, is there were opportunities for them last week, I think, to go to tempo and they didn't. But they went to tempo at specific spots within drives, which I think were key. Just to throw the defense something different, just to give now opposing defensive coordinators something to prepare for, where if you're going to be late on your substitutions or Minnesota's just not going to substitute, it's something to prepare for. We also saw in Darius Taylor's debut, Minnesota went two back, where in the backfield, there's Darius Taylor and Marcus Major. Darius Taylor and Daniel Jackson was a combo back there, trying to give different looks. Again, the theory of just trying to get your best playmakers the ball in space, a.k.a. Darius Taylor, Marcus Major, Daniel Jackson, Elijah Spencer, I think, has had a strong start to the season as well.
Yeah.
It's quite the theory. I mean, that's what you should be doing the whole time, and they're trying to do some different things. But to me, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. I think the play of the game for the offense was the first play of the second quarter, where it's a 3-0 game. You come out of the second quarter, it's 3rd and 9. And Minnesota completes a ball to Jamison Gears across the middle. Daniel Jackson clears out the play side linebacker. Gears finds the soft spot in the zone. You get a 3rd and long conversion. And then on that drive, you get 6 different receivers the ball. And you ended up plunging it in with Darius Taylor to get up double digits. But it comes down to the passing game there. We just mentioned it. 6 different receivers on the first touchdown drive. I mean, you have 4 different receivers with 4 catches to lead the team. That's the way I believe they want it to look. Now, it's not going to look that way every single week as these defenses get tougher. But House, I don't know what the EPA says, but I would tell you the feel for me was, it's 3-0, first play of the second quarter. It's a 3rd and long. You've struggled there for a long time. And Brosmer delivers a dart, does so the rest of the drive. And because of that, you're able to get up 10-0.
Well, you look at that moment of the game, it's 3-0. You just ended the quarter. You know, if you're not able to convert there, you're punting the ball away. Rhode Island's getting the ball back. You know, the flow of the game changed there because you feel those plays. I always say there's, you know, 2 or 3 plays a game that can really jolt your team, whether that's like a takeaway, a big conversion, you know, something like that. And I felt like that play definitely was really important. That, along with the interception by Goosby, I thought those two moments in the game were important, just giving a jolt to the team as they got into the second quarter. And then they sort of found their groove with all that quick game and staying on schedule offensively, getting the backs involved. I do think that, like we mentioned, you're going to have to hit on those explosive opportunities against the good teams. I mean, you right. got that crossing route shot to Brockington. You got the seam into the zone window to Driver. Like, you're going to have to execute those plays, especially when, you know, your quick game is stretching teams out horizontally more. You know, you're putting pressure on teams in that respect. When you attack vertically, you have to take advantage of those opportunities. So I think that's something that Minnesota definitely wants to clean up, and that's something that PJ referenced at the end of the game.
Luke, I want to ask you something about we can talk now about the Darius Taylor debut, which on the day I think he gets 18 touches, which look at Minnesota.
Yeah.
We get the assumption of rational coaching here, Mr. House, that Minnesota doesn't overload Darius Taylor in an FCS game where he gets 18 touches for just over 100 yards. But I know House and I have talked about this, and we'll let the listeners in on this in a second, but how healthy did you think Darius Taylor looked from your own eyes at Huntington Bank Stadium?
Yeah. I feel like he was working his way back a little bit. But you know, that's to be expected, you know, coming back in his first game with contact. So I think like now it was good to get him some touches in a game like this so that, you know, he's ready to rock as the games amp up here in the next few weeks.
Luke, what'd you think?
I think I would agree with Daniel that he looks like he's getting better, but you can tell that he's just a special caliber of athlete relative to the rest of the talent on the field. I think that's a really good segue, Ryan, from going, from talking about the passing game into the running game. But I want to leave with some stats here. On the day, the Gophers EPA was 17.25 according to Game On Paper. If you look at their passing EPA, it was 19.84. But rushing, guys, their rushing EPA was a minus 2.58. The running game was not particularly solid. And as we've talked about Ryan before, I think you alluded to this already, the offensive line is probably the root of the problem right now. And we have seen historically that, you know, this offensive line led by Brian Callahan can often start slow and frankly often struggles with smaller defensive lines, Daniel. Like I think they might improve just playing bigger, not nearly as athletic defensive lines. And this might have been another example today, but they're starting slow again, Daniel. And, you know, it has to start with the offensive line to improve the rushing game, does it not?
Yeah, I just think that like using the quick game as an extension of the rushing attack, I think that that's the bigger takeaway to me is like you almost have to put some of those quick game plays into the rushing box of things because it was such a huge component of being able to stretch horizontally and get the ball in space to create more plays. But I do think that like generating more vertical movement in the ground game, breaking more tackles, I think is going to be a big area of emphasis. You know, I think it was like 4 broken tackles on rushing plays. And I think Mangum had 2 of them right at the end of the game. So I think, you know, being able to break more tackles is very important moving forward. But I also think that like there were some successful hits that they had in there. They had that one outside zone hit for 17 in the game that I thought was blocked up really well. I thought Elijah Spencer blocked his tail off in that game. That guy has made some really good strides in the blocking side of it. So I think like just based on how the game flowed, they're rolling a safety down. They're, you know, like they took what the defense was giving them in respect of like the quick game. So I think you're going to see more creativity in the run game as the season goes on. I felt like it was more like what style of play do you have? What do you want to put out there on film? How do you want to approach this game? And that's kind of how Minnesota went about it.
I just feel for Quinn Carroll. I do because Edina's own starts the last 2 years at right tackle out of necessity for the offensive line. I think everyone listening to this, I think all three of us agree, the ideal world for Quinn Carroll is as a guard. He is an above average tackle, but he has such a higher ceiling on the interior where he doesn't have to deal with speed rushers and different things like that. And after 2 years of starting at right tackle, because that's what the team needed, he reps exclusively, at least at the practices that House and I were at. Now, that's only, I don't know, House, 4% of practices that actually happen. But after one game in which I'm not here to tell you, I didn't think Martez Lewis played well at all. He was an issue. They already slide him back to right tackle. They give Martez Lewis the first 2 series at right guard where he started, I think, every game last year. And then he's benched on the 3rd series for Ashton Beers, and that essentially holds for the rest of the game. And I don't know what to do about the whole Brian Callahan offensive line situation, because we would be much more worried, in my opinion, if they didn't have the track record of historically starting slow. The thing with this specific offensive line, though, is you got Ariante Ursary, who's a senior, Tyler Cooper, who's a senior, you have Quinn Carroll is a senior. Yes, Greg Johnson from Prior Lake, the starting center, is a true sophomore. Ashton Beers is only a redshirt sophomore, but Martez is a senior. You have a lot of experience, and you have a lot of – I mean, you're just very old up front. I feel like this is almost a different type of situation, but here would be my plea going into the Nevada game next week, because I'm not here to tell you that the offensive line played particularly well yesterday, especially in the run game. House, I cannot figure out for the life of me why they're struggling so much to get knockback up front. I think there's too many times where they're either stalemating or even get pushed into the backfield, which, you know, I know that they're doing a lot of stunts and twists, and it's just a missed assignment here and there from different players, which continues to happen, which is just negating the run game issues. I would just plea that give Ashton Beers the entire Nevada game at right guard and give Quinn Carroll the game at right tackle and figure it out. Because you have to stop messing around with the combinations, because guess what? In 2 weeks' time, you have Iowa's defensive line coming in, and then Michigan's, and then USC's, where all three of them got some freaks. And they're among the best defensive lines, I would argue, in the Big Ten, if not college football. So you need to figure out the offensive line combinations. You have a Mountain West team coming in next week, which we can get to a lot later on. But Luke, I think if we didn't have the historical data, we'd be much more worried considering how old they are up front. Mm-hmm. I just think they have to figure out the combination. They have to stop messing around with some certain players at this instance. I think we have enough data. But just roll out there with Ashton Beers next week, and if he is truly not the answer, we'll all see it. And then you have some decisions to make going into Iowa. I would just figure out the combination. Is that too much of an ask, House? Or what do you think the solution is to what ails the Minnesota Moving Company through 2 weeks?
I tell you, I think the just mixing it up and trying it right away is the right way to do it, because you just want to figure this thing out. Like, if you need to move people around, you know, you take what you got in camp, you look at the first game, and then now you start the second game and you go, okay, definitely need to make another switch. So I think, yeah, you're right. You got to get like the combinations settled down by the time Big Ten play starts, because you ideally don't want to be moving people around at that point. I think PJ kind of alluded to that like, hey, you have to figure this out fast. If there's no like clear separation in camp, you watch one game and you don't feel like it's up to the standard that you need it to be. But I just think it's like execution here and there. Like I feel they're close in some respects on it, but now's the time to work out some of those kinks, because you know that Minnesota will get that run game going eventually. It's just like becoming more consistent with the assignment side of it and generating more knockback in the run game, and also putting in the wrinkles that I think are probably going to suit them the best moving forward. Like, how much do you want to show early on in the season before you get into the Big Ten play too?
Now is the time more than any, right? Like, if you can't figure it out now, you might not figure it out for the entire season. So try it now. That's it.
I agree. It's concerning against a team like Rhode Island, where, yeah, they have one pretty good player in A.J. Pena, number 8 yesterday. He caused some havoc along Minnesota's offensive line in different spots. It's just for what we thought versus what's actually happening, I think we all three of us agreed coming into the season 2 weeks ago at this time, you thought the offensive line was going to be the strength of this team, because on paper it should be. You've got Ursary, who's going to be a top 60 overall draft pick in the next draft. You've got Tyler Cooper, who I know House's guy, Dane Brugler from The Athletic, had as a top 20 interior offensive line prospect. And Carroll has been a very solid Big Ten starting offensive lineman for years now. And the hope was going to be that sliding him inside provides more ceiling for you. But because you haven't been able to figure out right tackle, I think House and I would both tell you, UTEP transfer Alumina Keeley, who they took out of the portal, is not an answer there. If they want to have somebody besides Carroll there at right tackle, Martez Lewis ain't it. It's going to be returning to a redshirt freshman in Phillip Daniels, who I'm a little surprised we didn't see work into that mix for a series or two yesterday. But I mean, right tackle has been something that they've been trying to figure out for years. They just haven't been able to do so. And now that you got Nevada on the schedule and then Iowa's here, you need to start to figure out what the final answers are before you get to Big Ten play. And I hope that next week at this time, we're not talking about the offensive line in the way that we are with their lack of knockback, too many missed assignments. But they need to go out and show that they're deserving of what the accolades they were getting before the season are worth talking about here when the actual games are being played.
All right, so we got anything else we want to touch on offense, or should we catch a quick break and head over to the defense and special teams?
What did you think of Drake Lindsey?
Oh, yeah, we got to talk about Drake Lindsey. Yes, good. Like, and also, not just like, what did you think of Drake Lindsey? Like, what do you think of Drake Lindsey getting basically the fourth quarter, and then they actually let him throw a decent amount?
They let him throw with 2 minutes left in the game, an end zone shot up 41-0, which, look at PJ Fleck out here trying to get some points up on the board. I think you saw what they're excited about with Drake Lindsey as a true freshman. He looked calm. He looked poised. He was under control, scrambled well, made throws under duress on the touchdown throw, sees a corner come at him. Guess what? If the corner's coming at me, that means that he's vacating space and I should get it out quickly to my receiver, which he does. Now, I think the Drake Lindsey thing is worth talking about because he's an ankle turn away from being your starting quarterback. They have treated him differently than any other true freshman on the offense the entire time he's been here since January. But House, you can see some of the things that make this staff very excited about him.
Yeah, I've always said that anticipation trait with Drake Lindsey is the one thing that always captures your attention when you watch him. And there was at least one throw in there where the anticipation flashed. And I think that, like, this is the time when you got, you know, a game where you've got a big lead, get him in there and don't just like run the ball. Actually let this guy orchestrate the offense, because like you say, you're an ankle turn away from putting him in the game and you need to get him those reps. So I thought that was the productive element of yesterday's game. PJ and the staff getting some of those guys in there that, you know, you might have to play some of these younger players if something happens over the course of the season. So I thought, you know, Lindsey getting some action was definitely beneficial for the future, and not just for the future, but like for the present based on what could happen.
Yeah, you don't know what you don't know. Okay, let's grab that break and then we'll get back and talk defense and special teams. Ryan, the Burns Insurance Agency is here to support Gopher Gridiron Radio and its listeners as it tries to find them the best rates in the country. So, Ryan, do they cover the state of Illinois? Because I know Northern Illinois just knocked off Notre Dame.
They are not in Illinois, unfortunately, but they are in Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, New York, Florida, and Utah. So here's what I can promise you. As an independent insurance agency, which the Burns Insurance Agency is, they're going to get you the best coverage at the best price. They don't care whether it's State Farm, Geico, whoever it may be. Every single year, when you go through the renewal process with them, they will put you against the 20 different insurance companies that they write for, and they give you the best coverage at the best price. They routinely save people hundreds of dollars on their home, auto, commercial, whatever it may be. So if you think you're paying too much for insurance, what I want you to do today to support a local Gopher fan, go to insurancebyburns.com. That is the last name, B-U-R-N-S, or email him today at bill@insurancebyburns.com.
Ryan, Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group is supporting your Gopher team of choice if you buy or sell your home with them, because they give 1% of the purchase price to Dinkytown athletes. You know, Ryan, as we were going around the game yesterday, saw a lot of Dinkytown athletes swag, saw a lot of Duck Duck beer, etc. And what I really want to be able to see is, are we going to get a shirt or something that says, I bought or sold my house with Team Dinkytown? Because honestly, those are the true heroes in the stadium.
Well, when you're able to have 1% of your purchase price, which in this day and age of the market is somewhere around $3,500 to $4,000, that is not an insignificant amount of money. And in this real estate climate, it's important to have someone that you trust. And if you're looking into buying or selling and you don't have a realtor, check out our friends at teamdinkytown.com, or you can give them a call today. It's 612-250-8562.
Okay, so go for defense. Shutout. I mean, doesn't get much better than that, right? Like, it literally can't. On the day, the Gophers only gave up 6 first downs, 135 yards of total offense, 117 through the air, only 18 rushing. They forced 4 turnovers on the day. I mean, they tackled better, period, Ryan. Like, they did. It was just better. I get that it's a different opponent, but they were just much better. They cleaned a lot up yesterday.
That's my takeaway, is they tackled better. You go from missing, as Corey Heatherman, Minnesota's defensive coordinator, would tell you, they missed 22 tackles against North Carolina. Their starters yesterday, according to Pro Football Focus, only missed 3. Turns out when you tackle well, turns out when you stop the run, you're going to get off the field on third down, which we've spent so much time over the last 12 months lamenting is what was the worst third down defense in the Big Ten last year, allowed 50% of third downs to be converted against them in the opener. The starters yesterday, Mr. Luke Buehr for the Gopher defense, allowed 2 third down conversions of 9. And House, it turns out that when the average distance to go on 9 different third downs against your defense is nearly 11 yards, it's pretty tough for an opposing college football offense to convert those at a high clip.
Yeah, and you look at the play disparity in that game, I think it was like 72 to 43. Your defense is going to be really fresh when they're not on the field for a long period of time, so you can really get after it. And I think that was a big factor in the game as well, is just like Minnesota's efficiency offensively, ripple effect into the defense, which, you know, allows you to play complementary football. But I thought, like, big picture-wise, the defensive line, particularly in the interior, I thought Devin Eastern played a really good game.
Yep.
I thought the pop in the hands of the D-line was night and day different from the first game. Like, that was my big thing coming into this game. Like, I want to see the defensive line play with more pop in their hands and get some knockback and, like, really get off of blocks, make plays. And I thought Dev played maybe one of his better games here at Minnesota overall. And I liked the little passing down package they put in. It's a dime package.
Yeah.
Like, Kerry Brown is like a dime back.
And that's how Coy Parrish is now on the field as well.
You got Coy and Goosby in the back end. You got, you know, Kerry is kind of a dime back. I thought that was an effective package just because of the style that Rhode Island has offensively, really emphasizing getting the ball in space. And then also all those glance RPO and the RPO game that they had coming into the game, that dime package kind of allows him to Kerry Brown to basically, you know, roam around in there and tighten those windows and have extra protection in those medium to long down distance situations. So I thought that was an interesting wrinkle. They're definitely providing more multiplicity in their defense with the looks that they're doing, the stuff up front, things in the back end. Stylistically, from week 1 to week 2, this is just a slightly different defense in some respects. Small little tweaks, but I think that makes it, when you're prepping for them, a little more difficult to maybe understand what you're going to see week to week.
That's where Anthony Smith, I also thought, played really, really well. He only was on the field for 15 snaps yesterday because the Gopher defense as a whole just wasn't on the field quite a bit. 15 snaps, and on those, House, 7 hurries. I mean, that is an elite pass rush win rate. You think about the Coy Parrish interception. He's the one that gets pressure to flush the quarterback. Lindenberg tips it up in the air for Parrish. Jack Henderson also owes Anthony Smith his flowers for his pick 6 because Anthony's the one who got the pressure. Hunter Helms throws it directly to Jack Henderson's chest, and Mr. Jambalaya himself walks into the end zone. The defensive line showed up against the Rhode Island opponent they should. To House's point, I thought they were just okay last week, specifically the interior. That's where Devin Eastern showed up more. I think Jalen Logan Redding flashed a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You should, against an FCS opponent from the CAA, you should dominate the line of scrimmage. And I think that was one of the feature points from the D-line coach, Winston Delatu-Boudere, last week to this week, was we need to be better. We have to be better. You have to go out and show that we're better, and we have to start to build some more confidence. So, again, if you can stop the run, this is a team that has enough pass rushers. Between Anthony Smith is one of the best power rushers that I think we've seen in a Gopher uniform in the Fleck era compared to a Carter Coughlin, a Boye Mafe, or a Jod Joyner. Those guys are all more speed rushers. They're going to beat you with their speed, quickness, and bend. Anthony is just going to grown man you into the lap of the quarterback. Same thing kind of with Devin Eastern, but again, the defensive line showing up in a big way leads to plenty of turnover opportunities, and that's where I would argue they had 4 turnovers. I mean, Coleman Bryson keeps his head up on a couple. He'd be able to come away with a couple more interceptions yesterday, but the implementation of that dime package is a good call, House, because we didn't see it in game 1 against North Carolina, but that's a way to get Coy Parrish out onto the field, and that was funny talking to Coy after the game. We asked him about the interception, and he goes, well, I was on the phone before the call with Danny Collins, the safeties coach, and he told me, look for the 2x2, and this is what they're going to do. Turns out Collins was spot on. Parrots then positioned himself in the right spot. Lindenberg did his part, and that's how you get the turnovers. So here's one for you, though, through 2 weeks, is I understand that North Carolina was an inept passing game. Rhode Island didn't have any time, and they were just – it is what it is. But, Luke, I'd be curious for your thoughts first. I think Ethan Robinson and Justin Wally are playing at a really high level right now. Now, yeah. I understand the caliber of passing offense hasn't been great, but they are contesting everything that is thrown near them. They're tackling well in space. I mean, if this continues at least into the early part of the schedule against, I would tell you, Nevada's passing offense isn't great. Iowa's certainly is not. Neither is Michigan's from what we've seen so far. That could be a big boon for Corey Heatherman, because if you can trust your corners on the outside as much as they are so far and how as well as they're playing, they can get a lot more pressure and be very creative with how they move the rest of their personnel around. But what have you thought about Justin Wally and Ethan Robinson?
Yeah, so I thought that from a corner perspective, they've played well, right? They've diagnosed well. You know, Justin Wally has the one interception on the season. I think the thing that you brought up that's really astute, Ryan, is the fact that as long as they can hold up just long enough, you can continue to bring additional pressure. One of the things I was continually frustrated with a Joe Rossi-led defense is they didn't bring a lot of pressure. And Heatherman very clearly is going to be bringing more pressure. So I as long as they can continue to hold up, that'll give them the confidence that they can bring it.
House, I want to put it to you this way. You would know this better than anyone. I don't know if you know this or not. We didn't talk about it in the pre-production meeting. The blitz rate in week one for Corey Heatherman was north of 40% against North Carolina. Now, I don't know what it was yesterday, but have we seen as big of an uptick as I think we have in the first two games of the Heatherman era in just blitz rate alone compared to what we saw under Joe Rossi?
I think it was a little more aggressive the last game, like just stylistically and just in terms of what they were doing from a protection standpoint and like the style of play that you had for this game and based on the fact they like to get the ball out in space. So I think like there's been definitely increased aggressiveness, but I think coverage wise, it was a little bit of a different strategy yesterday than it was the first game. So I think that's been the thing that I've noticed defensively is like week to week, they'll do a little bit different things than they did before. So now I want to see after we get three games of data, like what does the third defensive performance look like? What are they going to do versus Nevada? How do they approach that game? I thought you mentioned there about Anthony Smith and how disruptive he was. I think the key in that is like when you're able to get in those passing down situations, you can really move him all over. Like you can move him inside, you can play him on the edge. You can like loop and stunt. You can play like these overload fronts. You've seen some of these 3x1 overload fronts that if you watch D'Amico Ryans with the Texans, you watch him when he was in San Francisco, like being able to get three guys on one side, you got Ant, you got JLR, you got Jaw, you can put Dev in there. Like then on the other side, you know, you can have Danny and then, you know, Muggs, Cody Lindenberg somewhere and just do a lot of different things. Like they haven't probably introduced all the type of packages that they can put within that. So I think what you're seeing here is like setting the base of what they can be defensively. And then as the season goes on, building off of that based on personnel, based on matchup tendency. And I also think that like your style of play every week now, it varies, you know, where you're going to see more of that, you know, two tight end, pound the ball, heavy Iowa style. Then you're going to see the USC spread it out in space. And, you know, that's where you're going to need probably some of those dime things. So I like to see like they're working on those things when they can. And then they'll be, you know, maximizing that versatility and the multiple nature of the defense as they need to, which now is the time to work on that stuff.
I do want to shout out Justin Wally one last time, especially on that first turnover where Aiden Goosby comes away with the interception, but it's Justin Wally's right arm that remains between the ball and the receiver that as Goosby the safety, Wally the corner, and the Rhode Island Ram receiver all hit the ground. Because he placed that right arm between the receiver and the ball, as they all tumbled, he was able to rip it out, and then that goes right into Aiden Goosby's lap. I mean, it was fantastic positioning, and that's what you were hoping for. from someone like Justin Wally there, a real veteran move. So, again, Rhode Island is a CAA offense, and you destroyed him up front, and then your back end made plays. I think Cody Lindenberg played an improved game. We mentioned him on the tip. Coy Parrish won, and then he also got his hands on a couple other ones. I'd say this. I know people are going to want us to talk about Coy Parrish, and I think on the day, Coy played 14 defensive snaps, and a lot of them, I think, were in that dime package that Minnesota implemented. Now, I know a question I get a lot, House, is why wasn't Coy Parrish on the field in game one? And my answer would be this, and let's see if yours is any different. He got here in June and he was banged up. Wasn't healthy until July. He's only been here 2 months. And you don't want to overload a true freshman, even as talented as Coy is. And I think everybody on the sidelines and in the stands can see how talented he is. You want to give him a niche role early. This is what I was talking about the entire offseason. This is your niche role. He's a dime package safety. And as he continues to finish his plate, which is this specific package, I think you'll see him implemented more and more and more, especially as he continues to make plays like he did on Saturday. But is your Coy Parrish thought similar to mine, or where are you now on the pride of Esko?
I think that's one of the things that I always say, like expectation levels for young players. Like, you have to be realistic with, like, what can this person do? And that point that you made about him being arriving in June, like, people have no idea how much 6 months of additional work with the coaching staff and being around the program and picking things up, how valuable that is. Like, that is just massive. And so when you see Coy playing in a game like this, this is a game he should play in. This is a game where he should mix in with the starters, because if he has to come in, you can use him in that role and feel a little bit more confident because he saw some things. He's played the game a bit. Now you'll probably see, you know, when they implement this passing downs package, he could be featured within that occasionally. And then, you know, maybe his role expands. Is there an injury? Is there something that happens? And you're more confident and willing to put him in. But that's what I thought was the takeaway of yesterday, getting those guys in the game. It doesn't hurt at all. And finding ways to use packages that maybe will be beneficial down the road, not just playing them to play them. Like, hey, this package might be something that you can use down the road in the season. Run it and get him some experience in it.
All right, let's talk a little bit of special teams, guys. On the day, only one punt for Mark Crawford, so I think we can kind of skip over that. Dragan Kesic, 2 for 3. The miss was a lengthy one, but he also drilled, what was it, a 53-yarder? That was
First field goal attempt back after missing the game winner. Fleck throws him out there for a 53-yarder, and he smokes it right down the uprights.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was obviously improved and then obviously very good on extra points. Nothing really going in the way of kick return and or punt return, for Rhode Island, largely because there were no punts. So let's talk about the return games and focus primarily there. Okay. We know that Redding gets injured on a punt return, his only punt return of the day, which I think netted 0 yards.
He ran probably 25 yards and netted zero, and unfortunately got rolled up on there.
Netted zero. And then we saw Daniel Jackson come in. He played two, one in number 9 and then one in number 39.
Why was he in 9? Why was he in 39? Because on the first one he returned, that should have been a flag.
Yeah.
He and Devin Williams are both number 9 for your favorite Golden Gopher football team. They were on the field at the same time. That should have been a flag. And considering it was a 4th and 4 at midfield, that would have given Rhode Island a first down across into Minnesota territory. But the refereeing crew missed it, and Minnesota didn't on the second time, which is why they threw him out there as number 39.
Okay. And then, generally one observation on punt returns before we get to Coy Parrish. They caught all of them yesterday. Did they not? Maybe they didn't. I think they caught all of them. That I thought was important.
I think they let a couple bounce.
Did they? I felt like they caught more of them then. Okay, my bad. But so maybe I'll start with you. Coy Parrish gets you know, gets a punt return. I actually ended up sitting next to a couple of people that listen regularly to the podcast. They pointed out to me that he was back there, and then he just proceeds to return it for 28 yards. House, you can see how dynamic he is as a playmaker. He looks very fluid, looked great catching the ball. It's, in some ways, it feels like they let the genie out of the bottle, and it's going to be really hard to put it back in.
Yeah, I look at Coy. You know, a lot of people ask, like, what traits do you look for in a really good punt returner? And I think the initial inclination of people is like, you want speed, you want the straight line guy, you want, you know, the guy that can just outrun everybody. The most important trait in my eyes is the suddenness and like ability to make multiple people miss and then accelerate. And when I was at practices and they were doing the punt period, he had punt return reps. And it was like, yeah, the suddenness, the fluid movement of this guy fits a dynamic punt returner. And then you saw him get that rep in the game. Now, you know, okay, with Q status unknown, like how will they approach the return game now moving forward? That's what I'm interested in. We'll kind of see where Q's at, but it'll be fascinating to see if Coy, I think when you're in a spot where you need a big score, you need a big play, you're putting that guy back there to try to make something happen. I love when teams do that just to try to get a jolt and make a big play.
At no point going forward should Daniel Jackson be returning a punt.
Yeah,
your number one receiver, by the way.
Unless he's going to fair catch it. Like, that's the only way.
Like, there is no shot I want to see Daniel Jackson returning a punt again, especially because Coy Parrish is only playing in a niche role on defense, whereas Daniel Jackson is one of your most important pieces on offense. Like, Coy Parrish should be having this job now, depending upon. Here's what I'll say. If Quentin Redding's healthy next week, I expect to see him back out there. Would I do that? No, but I'm not the one who makes those decisions at this point. So I would love to see Coy Parrish get a chance next week, because you even saw it there on his, I think, what was it, 28-yard return?
Yeah, 28.
Yeah, that's against Rhode Island's backup team. Like, let's not make it anything
right,
else.
Right.
But, like, Coy is sudden, and I also think an underrated part of being a really good punt returner is you got to be fearless, because there are going to be sometimes you elect to field it, and you're going to get blasted. But there's also going to be times where you feel that you make that first man miss, and then God forbid this punt return unit actually gains consistent field position for an offense. So what would I do? I'd throw Coy back there. What do I think will happen if Quentin Redding is healthy? I think he'll be back there, and he'll kind of go from there. So, Luke, I was hoping and praying for a explosive play. I don't know that the Coy Parrish one technically counts. There was one punt where I thought Joey Gerlach could have blocked it, but he kind of...
Yeah, he pulled up.
Yeah, not incredibly sure what the call was there. But I don't know. They were fine. I was happy to see Dragon smoke the 53-yarder, the first one he had. You know, we'll see if this becomes a consistent thing where if he's missing, he's missing right on that 55-yarder. That would have been good from 70, but he just had it pushed right in the last few yards, and then he smoked the 47-yarder as well. So we talked about it all week. I'm not worried about the Big Ten kicker of the year. So we'll figure it out. But I just want to see – you have one more chance, House. I mean, do you think I'm wrong with this? And I'm probably going to lead with it again next week, much to the chagrin of Luke Buehr, is you're just not getting anything explosive in the return game, in the block game from your special teams. Now, if you want to make a change, that would be giving someone else, because the other interesting part was when Redding went down, he's also the primary kick returner with Jordan Newbin, of all people. They threw out Lemecki rocket ship for Luke Buehr, and he actually gained 2-3 yards of field position on his loner.
That was not clean either. Like, he caught it kind of weird, and he still ended up getting 27 yards. But
is it too much to ask for in a non-conference game when you haven't had return touchdowns in 60 games? You haven't blocked a field goal since it's been years, and that's years plural for so many things. Why do you think that they just can't get anything explosive in the blocker return game?
I think it's early in the season. I think they're trying to you know, get some of these guys up to speed, move people in and out, try to figure out what the special teams units are going to look like, play a lot of guys. I'm interested to really get to like the middle to late portion of the year just to see like, okay, what type of schemes is Lig going to put in as some of these guys get their footing, as Lig gets to know what these guys can do. I think that's kind of another element of this is like, Lig hasn't been here that long. Like he's trying to figure out, you know, what personnel works, what doesn't, what schemes fit these guys. And, you know, always with your roster, I think your special teams changes based on, you know, you saw it yesterday. Daniel Jackson had to go in and do punt return because Q got hurt. Like things happen. And so I think right now you can't really take much from special teams until you get to like the middle to the end of the year and see, hey, you know, is there going to be some change in terms of like impact on the game? And I'm always, like I've said, I'm a value field position guy. I think like fair catching and doing things like that can be valuable depending on the game you're playing relative to your opponent. I think you got to look at it week to week. Your strategy can't be the same. Like you can't be just gunning aggressive on special teams if the game isn't conducive to it. What do you need to do based on the strengths of your opponent and the weaknesses of them?
Is a measured special teams take like that allowed on this podcast, Luke Buehr? Please advise.
Yeah, it's allowed, and you're not allowed to actually respond. So that's where we're going to go.
I don't know. I'm just always a guy that, like, I got to get multiple games in play, especially when you have a new special teams coordinator. I got to see, like, how he adjusts.
You had to feel like it was a win that there were no procedural penalties on special teams this week.
Well, right? There should have been because
that's fair.
They had two number nines out there, and the referee crew just missed it.
In fairness, on that one, like, why are we putting Daniel Jackson out there to begin with? So that was my initial
question. My question is I thought they had to announce that. Like when someone changes their jersey
in the press box, and you know the rules better than I do.
They see because they had that. When the Wisconsin changed jerseys last year and ran that trick play and Illinois couldn't ID, like they changed that rule. And I don't know if it applies to special teams. I got to go read the rules to see, but I thought that you had to announce when someone changed your jersey and I didn't hear it in stadium. I don't know. Like
I didn't hear
up in the box. Maybe they said something. I don't know.
I don't
usually
think they did.
Hear the ref announcements.
Yeah.
But I was surprised by that.
All right. You guys want to talk a little Big Ten? I'm not sure that I want to go through all of the Big Ten games. Maybe we just focus on
the ones that I think are worth talking about.
I was going to say, even the ones at least coming up for the Gophers. So like, let's start with Iowa State, Iowa, right? This is the Gophers' first Big Ten game. Iowa loses 20-19 on a late field goal, not a last second field goal because there were 5 or 6 seconds left that ultimately ended in another interception thrown by Iowa. But you know, on the day, very clear that Iowa has a formidable running attack with Caleb Johnson, but their passing game, Ryan, just not there.
No, I don't think Cade McNamara is the answer. I think he went 13-28 for 99 yards. There were some interesting clock management things for Kirk Ferentz yesterday as well, but this is an Iowa team that I almost wonder if it's at a point now where if you want to compare it to Minnesota, Kirk Ferentz is going to run the offense that he believes is going to win them a football game. And that's where they really struggled to throw the ball in the latter half of that game. But House, what did you think of the Cyclones and the Fighting Matt Campbells being able to get the Cyhawk?
Well, yeah, a couple of big explosive plays. I mean, that is always going to be the difference in those games. I think Iowa, you're looking here now, putting in a brand new offensive scheme. You know, I thought first half of the Illinois State game, shaky. Second half was better. Their execution improved. Yesterday, you know, it still feels like they're trying to kind of navigate, you know, what can your personnel do? What things put them in the best position to be successful. And then facing the style of defense that they played, you know, Iowa State stylistically is going to be a lot different than anything you're going to see all year. So I think, you know, navigating some of those things that happened early in the season. Now let's see, like, when they get to the fourth game, what does the offense look like? Because you know the defense is going to keep them in every single game. Like, if you can get to the point where you can score 20 or more, I mean – you're going to be in a good spot. So I just was a little bit surprised at the explosive plays. I caught bits and pieces of this game. driving back yesterday once I got back. But I mean, it, Iowa's offense, we'll see how it shakes out once they start getting some more comfort level with it.
All right, maybe we'll talk quickly about Michigan and Texas. Texas wins this game easily, 31-12. I don't think Michigan is quite the team that they were last year. They struggled to run the ball. They had three turnovers on the day, and Texas is just really, really good.
Texas is really, really good up front is what I learned yesterday, and I think Michigan may be a little overhyped there, especially on their offensive line. But I also just wonder, what is Michigan doing at the quarterback situation here? Because that's a team that Minnesota, as many people know, have at the end of the month yet. Now, they have a really good front seven, and I know they missed a couple of key members of their secondary yesterday that didn't help when Quinn Ewers is going for 246 yards and three tutties. But, House, I think the thing to me is, what is Michigan going to do at quarterback? Because it feels like they were building an offense that was supposed to be around maybe more of a run-centric quarterback in Alex Orji compared to what they have now in Davis Warren. But I also think Texas looks like the number three team in the country, and Michigan looks like a team like they're going to be a fringe college football playoff, maybe a bottom top 25 type of team coming out in their first year under Sherrone Moore. But from what you saw of this game, what'd you think?
I just feel like Texas is really, really good. And I don't even think Sark's even dipped into the bag of tricks yet. Like from a play calling standpoint, like they were just physical at the line of scrimmage, and their offensive line really set the tone in that game. And that was the difference. Quinn Ewers just locked in, playing extremely well, efficient, accurate, you know, being able to just throw every different type of route that you need within the game script. You know, you mentioned Michigan. I think, like, you're right. I thought Alex Orji was probably going to be the guy, and he'd blend in, and, you know, they'd have package runs for him. He got a couple yesterday. But, like, Davis Warren, I mean, navigating, you know, that quarterback position, is he the guy moving forward? Are they putting Alex Orji in? Like, they're kind of stuck in a world where they're trying to figure out what their quarterback situation is, and that can always lead to maybe not playing up to your full potential. And then that puts pressure on the defense. When your offense is inefficient, your defense is going to face a lot of restraint because of the fact that, you know, you're going to be on the field more, and you're going to be racking up physical plays and all those things. So Michigan played a team that's going to be like in the mix at the end. And I just feel like that was a statement win for Texas going in there and being more physical than Michigan at the line of scrimmage.
All right, let's skip over USC. They won 48-0 over Utah State. UCLA was off. Do you guys want to talk a little bit about Maryland and Michigan State, since Maryland would be next on the schedule?
You doubted Aiden Chiles, House. I don't know why you continue to do that.
No, I like Aiden Chiles.
I think he'll figure it out. I just got to get his stats out for the day. 363 yards of passing, three touchdowns, three interceptions. Michigan State wins 27-24. And then Chiles also had eight runs for 11 yards. But, yeah, a close game, maybe not one that people thought that Michigan State could win, but they found a way against Mike Locksley's crew.
Holy cow, how good is Nick Marsh, though? Holy man, that guy. I tell you what.
He can run. Yeah, Michigan State's quarterback is going to throw the ball really far down the field. He's going to take a lot of chances, but Nick Marsh can scoot. Now, I'd also say, House, I'd tell you, coming into the year, I didn't have a great feel for what Maryland was going to be this year. Do you have a better feel for what they want to be now in terms of in their first year post Taulia Tagovailoa, or what do you think the identity of this Maryland team is going to be from 2 weeks of data?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure it out. Like, I still think we need another game to get a look at it. Like, I think they've got, you know, a quarterback in Billy Edwards who is underappreciated. Like, honestly, he's had so much time to really kind of develop and sit behind and kind of learn and do what he needs to do to get in a position to be ready. But I think they're very athletic on defense. The second level and third levels of the defense have some talent in there. I just thought that, like, Michigan State hitting over the top on a couple of big plays for explosives, I mean, that was the difference in the game. And then, you know, did a good job of stopping the run. I mean, we know that with Joe, that he's going to do a really good job of eliminating that. And kept sticking around throughout the game. And then boom, it's like, hey, here you go. Find a way at the end, make the field goal. That's a huge win for Michigan State. I mean, it might not seem like it on the surface, but
yeah,
to go out there, get a road win, second game of the season with Jonathan Smith, that could be the difference at the end in terms of getting a bowl game. Like, that was a game I felt like they had to win if they want to be in that conversation. But they did a great job of building their roster this offseason. They added a lot of productive players on defense. They got a lot of guys that can rotate up front. I think the key for them is going to be the back end. If they get, you know, they already had a couple injuries back there. Can they hold up? But the good thing is their pass rush is outstanding.
All right. Arguably, probably the game of the night for me was Illinois taking down the Kansas Jayhawks 23-17. This was just kind of felt like a prototypical Brett Bielema game. You know, Kansas outgains Illinois 327 yards to 271. But, you know, in the end, Illinois comes back, scores 10 in the fourth quarter, and gets the victory, Ryan.
I mean, when you're plus three in the take give like exactly. Illinois was, I mean, that's, to me, the game. I mean, when you have four turnovers for Kansas, that's probably a game they win if they don't turn over the ball that much. But that's a huge win for Brett Bielema. I think I saw it's the first time they've sold out that stadium in his era there. I'm going to be very curious to see what Illinois is, because they couldn't run the football in this game. Luke Altmyer was fine. Like, there was just a lot of different things in this game that maybe Kansas lost it more than Illinois won it. But this is an Illinois team that is going to be very interesting to see where they're at when they play Minnesota House, because now they start a gauntlet, essentially, in the 4 of the 5 weeks before they play Minnesota. They have to go on the road to Nebraska, who beat the and they just destroyed Colorado up front from the word go. They have on the road at Penn State, Purdue, but then they have two games against Michigan and Oregon before they play the Gophers. But what did you think about Brett Bielema's big win in that sold-out stadium?
Well, I say it's just a credit to what they were able to do, replacing players that they lost with productive options in the transfer portal, especially defensively. You know, you talk to people across the Big Ten like, hey, which schemes are the most difficult to coach against? And they're going to tell you that Purdue and Illinois, that, you know, that tree of defense, you know, where you've got Ryan Walters, who kind of passed off to Aaron Henry, and, you know, they run that, you know, 80% of the time, man coverage, changing the presentation. You got like, you know, 6-7 guys in the line of scrimmage. You bluff out into cover two, Tampa two, like all this stuff that you got to deal with. And you got to run good routes. You got to call plays to get your guys open. And I think that, like, Illinois is executing defensively well. I thought, you know, early last year, I didn't think their defensive line played up to standard. But I think this year you're starting to see them, you know, find a groove, play better with more tight fundamentals defensively. And I think offensively, they're flashing, but I still think, like, execution wise over on that side of the ball, Altmyer tries to do too much sometimes. Like, he's risky with the football. And I think that is going to hurt them in some games if he can't take better care of the football.
All right. So next on the Gopher schedule would be Rutgers, who won 49-17 over Akron. The Zips moved to 0-2, Rutgers to 2-0. This really wasn't much of a contest. Rutgers rushed the ball really well. Ethan was pretty good. He was 14 for 23 for 230 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 1 interception. I think, you know, defensively, Rutgers is probably going to be pretty good. It's going to be interesting to see when they jump up and, you know, play some more healthy competition next week against Virginia Tech.
That's going to be one I got circled on the schedule for next week. You know, Ethan so far, 6 passing touchdowns, 1 pick, completing north of 60% of his passes. Now, they've also played Howard and Akron. And turns out when he's kept clean, because he has yet to be sacked this season, he's going to look a little bit better. But that's where, now that Rutgers is going to start to get into the meat of this thing, where, to your point, they play a Virginia Tech team on the road next week, and then they get into conference play. What does Ethan look like? I'd also tell you, House, I'm surprised that your guy is Kyle Manungai, right?
Kyle, yeah. Manungai.
Yep, Manungai.
I don't know why they're rushing him 27 times in a game against Akron when he's one of your best players, but turns out the PJ Fleck tree and the Greg Schiano tree share some similar philosophical things there, Mr. House.
Well, we'll see. Like you say, good measuring stick game for Rutgers here. I mean, I want to see when they're playing a power opponent. How does it look? How does it all fit together? I don't think you can learn much from the first two games just stylistically based on, the opponent that they're playing. So this will be the first game where you can get a true read on Rutgers and then, decide whether they're a team that could potentially compete.
I don't know about you guys, but I was paying attention as I could to the Penn State Bowling Green game. Bowling Green gave them a scare, but Penn State's able to pull it out 34-27.
We saw that Bowling Green team. I know some people made fun of them, and I know everybody wants to think about that game at Huntington Bank Stadium, but I remember sitting in that press conference afterwards listening to Scott Leffler, the Bowling Green head coach, and he's like, if we can get a lot of these guys back for next year, which I believe they did, they're going to have a shot to win the MAC.
Yeah.
And if that team, that Bowling Green rolled out yesterday, that was fearless, put up 27 points in Happy Valley, continues into the MAC, that's going to be a pretty good football team, man.
Yeah, and they were up 24-20 at halftime. They got held in check in the second half, but yeah, I mean, they gave them a scare for sure. You got anything you want to add to that one, House?
No, I haven't had a chance to watch that game back yet, but I'm curious to see what the themes were on that one.
All right, and then I think the last one, this would be the last Gopher game of the season, against Wisconsin. Wisconsin did win against South Dakota 27-13. They had a 17-3 lead at halftime. South Dakota came back and outscored them 10-3 in the third, and then Wisconsin kind of closed the door with a touchdown at the end. I don't know. I didn't get a chance to watch any of this game, but at least looking at the stats, like Van Dyke was okay at best, 17 of 27 for 214 yards and a touchdown. They ran the ball all right. Ches Malusi led them in carries, but wasn't the most efficient. I don't know what you guys thought. South Dakota tends to be pretty good. I don't know if they're going to be good this year. Do either of you guys know?
Well, I think they're ranked, but Wisconsin's a weird football team right now that I feel like I don't know much more about than I did 2 weeks ago, other than they figured out at the end of the game how to win it. I mean, you're talking about in game one against Western Michigan, who just got absolutely eviscerated yesterday. Western Michigan's leading the game in the fourth corner at Camp Randall. And then yesterday, this game's a one possession game in the fourth quarter against a Missouri Valley team. And now Bama comes to town next week, which I'm not here to tell you Bama looked great yesterday against South Florida. I mean, they really put on the gas at the end there, but I don't know about the Dairy Raid, House. I know that Van Dyke was expected to come in, but I even look at the run game from Wisconsin yesterday, where between Ches Malusi and Darian Dupree, their two backs there, 22 carries for 84 yards against an FCS opponent. What is that? What are they? Minnesota's running game right there. I mean, where are you at on Wisconsin right now?
Defensive line is the X factor for me on that team. I think that James Thompson injury was massive. They kind of wanted to ease Brandon Lane along the transfer, and now he's going to have to start rotating in and get acclimated quickly. It was a later add. And so will they be able to control the line of scrimmage? Can they stop the run? I think that's going to be the key for Wisconsin. I felt like the first game against Western Michigan, it was just like an execution thing. Like they were trying some stuff in the passing game, trying to figure, use that game as an opportunity to try to, get your passing game in a spot where you can execute it better. And then when that happens, when the execution improves there and those concepts all fit together, like then you're going to be able to run the ball better. So I think Wisconsin, my read on it, is trying a lot of different things through the first two games here, focused on improving execution, specifically in the passing game, which will then help them run the ball better with box counts improving. I think that Wisconsin this week, like you say, against Alabama, huge measuring stick game. Like we're going to learn a lot about UW, and the big, big emphasis in that game is how will their D-line play? Is Alabama going to be able to run the ball really, really well against them? That's the concern that I have with Wisconsin at this point, based on their roster.
All right. So fun to break down this first Gopher victory of the season. Want to thank again Burns Insurance Agency, Team Dickey Down Real Estate Group, and Homefield for making this possible. House, thank you for again for joining us. Yeah, we're excited to break down the Nevada game next, and appreciate everyone who listens. So, yeah, have a great week and go Gophers.